This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It's Tuesday, and I'm glad you're on board with us here today. A lot to cover today. And an exclusive, I'm going to get right to it, because in an exclusive from Fox News today, the claim that the fatal 2012 Benghazi terrorist attacks were sparked by an anti-Muslim video was crafted in Washington by Barack Obama and his administration appointees and reflected neither eyewitnesses nor real-time reports from any of the Americans under siege. That, according to the final report from the Benghazi Select Committee. The GOP report released earlier today, followed by less than a day by a report by the Democrats on the panel saying that security at the Benghazi Libya facility was woefully inadequate. But former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton never personally denied any requests from diplomats for additional protection. The GOP report says that portions of the report say one U.S. agent at the American outpost in Benghazi, whose name was withheld for security reasons, told the committee he first heard some kind of chanting. Then the sound was immediately followed by explosions, gunfire, and people rushing the compound. He said maybe 70 AK-47s, grenades, RPGs, a couple of different assault rifles. The whole message, as you probably knew before, crafted, made out of whole cloth. Unbelievable. Of course, the Democrats and the Clintons will continue there. That's old news. Nothing to see here. Move along. It's old news. It's just that vast right-wing conspiracy trying to destroy me. Yeah. All right. The hotline's open. Why not? 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. We'll open up the phone line, and we'll go to Philip, WFNT, our affiliate in Flint, Michigan. Philip, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. I don't know if I came in at the end of the conversation when I heard the guy talking about abortion and why he was talking about, you know, these are just basic ideas and rules we want. But, you know, let's put a little statistics to his little rules that are common sense. First off, less than 0.01% of all the women who go to an abortion clinic have a problem that requires them to go to a hospital. Did you know that? I don't like abortion.
Your point?
My point is, if someone said to you that 99.99% of the people aren't going to have a problem when they go to an abortion clinic, and let me just jump right to the point here.
At what point should an abortion no longer be allowed? Is it 10 weeks, 20 weeks, 30 weeks? At what point should an abortion no longer be allowed?
When it's viable or endangers the life of the mother.
Well, that's nice to say and all, but here's the problem with that. The Democrats, just last year, when a bill was put forth that abortions past 20 weeks should no longer be allowed, the Democrats unanimously rejected that bill. When the baby in the womb is north of 5 months, they think it's still perfectly appropriate. In fact, Democrats want no restrictions on abortions at any time. As far as I can tell, they probably want postnatal abortions.
Sir, I don't agree with that, because I was born very early, and the doctors all told my father to go get a casket. And I lived.
Now, what's your point?
Maybe that's the love of God and the love of my parents for me.
Yeah, maybe it is, but the point is Democrats would have aborted you. Democrats would have thought it legal to abort.
I was a premature baby. I was more than 3 months early, and I weighed less than 3 pounds. when I was born.
Well, in today's world, Philip. In today's world,
they say babies up.
It would
to
be
a
legal
now.
Yeah. I don't think you're hearing me. I do appreciate you checking
in,
though, Philip.
But my mother wasn't having an abortion. I was born.
I understand that. The fact of the matter is, though, in today's world, that would be perfectly appropriate to abort you and anybody of that size. In fact, older. And the abortion industry in this country was born of Margaret Sanger, and Margaret Sanger's specific role was to rid the world of black people because they were weeds on the face of humanity, as she put it. Margaret Sanger was an abject eugenicist who hated people of color. It's who Democrats embrace is Margaret Sanger. She is the founder of Planned Parenthood. She is a butcher who died in the 1960s, and she's held up and revered today as some sort of a hero, which she is neither. If there is justice, she's rotting in hell somewhere. Philip, thank you for stopping in. I greatly appreciate the conversation. The hotline number is 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. It's the thing that Democrats don't want you to know, one of many. Margaret Sanger, the mother, for lack of a better, more disgusting term, the mother of Planned Parenthood. Her goal, her objective, was to rid the world of mud races, if you will. Talk about racist. Talk about racist, and then to convince pastors and politicians that it was the right thing to do. Now, as far as the number of women that have abortions and need medical care, I have no idea if those statistics are right or wrong. I mean, 0.01%, based on what? What research, based on what state, what federal, you know, World Health Organization? I don't know where those numbers come from. As far as I know, he could be just throwing those out there. I have no idea. Could be complete garbage. But I do know that abortion clinics should certainly meet the basic standards of medical care, cleanliness, and professionalism. I think that's pretty easy to understand. But it wouldn't matter to some. It wouldn't matter to some among us about what the standards were. They would never vote against abortion for any reason, on any level, no matter what the situation, no matter what the question. It would make no difference. They would stand up and cheer for abortion and so-called women's rights. And yet at the same time, if a person runs a stop sign and collides with a woman who's 3 or 4 months pregnant, and they both, and the woman dies at the scene, as does her baby. There are two counts of homicide. Now, how can that be? How can it be that in a place where abortion is legal, for the baby that died in the car crash, how can it be murder in one case, in the case of a car crash, and not murder in the case of abortion? I don't talk about abortion much, but it's a pretty simple logical problem that you have if you can't answer that question with any certainty. Tuesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
All right, real quickly, we have to get to the hotline for a caller before we move on to our next conversation. We've got Frank and DeWitt. Frank, what's up?
Yeah, a reply to Philip, two quick points. Number one, obviously, Philip has never heard of the group Women Exploited by Abortion, which recounts a gazillion cases of women having medical problems to going through these butcher clinics. Number two, Philip obviously hasn't heard the arguments that they put forth for abortion in the first place about the back alley abortions when tens of thousands of women supposedly were dying because they didn't have safe, legal license clinics. So, either, you know, it's hypocritical, and you're right. If Philip was around Now, he'd probably be aborted. So,
Frank, thanks for checking in, brother. I got to run. I greatly appreciate it. The hotline number is 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Now, here's something you haven't heard before. Speaking of what's legal and what's not legal, when can a parrot, when can as in the bird, when can a parrot be considered a reliable witness in court? Great question. Nelson Miller, Associate Dean at the Western Michigan University Cooley Law School. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. And by the way, just this morning, the BBC picked up this story of this Michigan parrot, this Sand Lake parrot. So it's now the parrot heard around the world.
Well, there you go. Nicely played. I'll give you that. Nicely played. So tell us the backstory so our listeners understand what's being discussed here.
Sure, Steve. Very unfortunate incident involving what looked at the time like a murder attempted suicide. That's certainly the way the prosecutor has charged it up in Sand Lake, Nuevo County. Husband shot 5 times. Wife found at the home lying with a shot in the head next to him, but living, and she did survive. Hospitalized, released from the hospital, and then saying, "I had nothing to do with it," even though she left, apparently, according to published reports, 3 suicide notes. So, the prosecutor has charged her with, with murder, the killing of her husband in the home, and I presume the reports haven't been clear, but has all the physical evidence to prove it. I presume, again, the gun with the prints and everything, because she was laying right by his side when the police discovered her and him at the home. So that's the backstory. But the couple owned a parrot, or at least he owned a parrot. He'd been married before, and he owned a parrot with his ex-wife.
But
and the ex-wife recovered the parrot, and the parrot began to say something.
The parrot's name is Bud. Bud the parrot.
Bud the parrot. It's an African gray parrot, apparently about 21 years old, which is about, kind of early, sort of early 30s if you were a human, because apparently they live quite a while. And what the parrot began to repeat, apparently about 2 weeks after the shooting, was "don't," and then a profanity, "shoot." So in essence, "don't shoot." And the then owner or keeper of the parrot, who was the ex-wife, was saying that this must have been the last words of her ex-husband. And the parents of that ex-husband, of the decedent, were also proponents of the parrot, urging the prosecutor to consider the parrot as, in effect, some form of witness or some form of physical evidence relating to the crime.
So what do you think? I mean, here we are. You are the associate dean of Western Michigan University, Cooley Law School, and animal law has certainly advanced in the last 50 years in different areas. I don't know that we've ever had parrots working as witnesses in cases before, or I don't know if witness is the right term. Maybe a piece of evidence is the right term. What do you think?
Well, exactly, Steve. The first thought of some, at least, has been, well, call the parrot as a witness, and it's not a humorous situation, but the idea of it is preposterous. It's interesting that animal experts say that this species of parrot, the African gray parrot, has the intelligence of up to a 5-year-old child, and 5-year-old children have testified, particularly in abuse cases. Statutes require an oath of witnesses. They must swear or affirm to tell the truth. Everybody knows that. So the judge has to at least find that the witness knows right from wrong. And in the case of a 5-year-old child, in cases of 5-year-old children, judges have permitted 5-year-olds to testify. But, of course, a parrot doesn't have the human intelligence of a 5-year-old child, and there's really no chance of that happening. It would be something like, "please raise your right wing," wouldn't it, and repeat after
yes,
me.
Yes. So what's the bottom line here? Was the parrot used as evidence or not?
Yeah, well, the prosecutor's considering, published reports say that he's considering whether the witness, would be reliable evidence and relevant evidence. And those are the two key issues. We'd have to have an animal expert saying that the husband's last words, that the parrot could pick it up, on one time. Usually you have to kind of coach or train or repeat something to a parrot for it to pick it up. But if an animal expert said, no, this parrot could have picked up the last words, and then the judge also determined that the evidence was relevant, then it could potentially get in. Relevance is a significant issue. I mean, we don't have any doubt that there was a shooting. So what do the words "don't shoot," which is what the parrot would have you know, is videotaped as saying. What does that add to the overall equation? But in the final analysis, the prosecutor really has something to think about, and that's there's an unwritten book for prosecutors, and the first line of it is don't do it. Those brilliant ideas that you have in the middle of the night, don't call the parent as a witness. Don't use the parent as evidence. And the best example of that is the O.J. case, where Johnny Cochran kind of goaded the prosecutor, assistant prosecutor Chris Darden, into getting O.J. to try on the glove. Seemed like a brilliant idea at the time, and it certainly wasn't. It was probably the turning point in the case. So if I were asked, the prosecutor wanted my advice, don't do it. You know, don't give it a try. You've got the physical evidence, and go with the traditional way of proving this case.
Do it the old-fashioned way, shoe leather and evidence.
Absolutely. Mm. You don't want to end up the parrot prosecutor.
Right. You don't want to be parroting a bad idea.
Exactly.
That's exactly. Right. All right, my friend. I greatly appreciate it. Nelson Miller, Associate Dean, Western Michigan University, Cooley Law School. We'll parrot some more advice after this. Thank you, sir. It is Tuesday. Should the bird be allowed to be evidence? It is a strange world in which I live. Strange world.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right. Welcome back to it on a Tuesday. It's the Steve Gruber Show. Glad to have you on board. Hotline number is up and running today, as always, 888-900-9966, the Common Sense Hotline, so bring it if you've got it. Steve checking in from Petoskey real quickly. Steve, what's on your mind?
Well, I just want to give another perspective on bicyclers. And my heart goes out to those who are injured, and I know people don't watch out for bicyclers, but the perspective is this. I walk the wheelway here in Petoskey as a hiker and to get in shape. And I have these people who dream that they're Lance Armstrong or something, all dressed up in their garb, come flying by me about as fast as they can pedal, and no warning, no nothing. If I took a step sideways, they're going to run me over. And on the other hand, they don't pay any taxes. There's no license fees for bicycles in the state of Michigan. Our license fees pays for all these roadways and everything. So before they have a legitimate gripe, they might want to put a little skin in the game and pay for it a little bit, too.
You know what? I can live with that, Steve. I'm a cyclist. I understand. I ride a lot of those trails, too, and I like that trail in Petoskey as well, and the ones in Charlevoix, the one under construction in Boyne City, a lot of work for bike trails. In fact, all the way from Monroe to the west end of the UP, trails are being put in. So I appreciate your input. It's something to consider. Thank you.
Yep, bye.
All right, moving forward now, Stephen Rhodes is a professor of politics emeritus at the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. Here to discuss, as he puts it, the uncomfortable truth about daycare. Professor, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure, Steve.
So, you know, over the last 40 or 50 years, I spent a little bit of time in daycare, and my oldest daughter spent time in daycare and did my other children. Not as much as some, but probably more than others. And when you say the uncomfortable truth about daycare, enlighten me. What do you mean?
Well, I think that the people doing most of the American studies are women, and they're feminists, and they really want things to work out for women's careers. And I think they gloss over some of the very best studies, which come out of Quebec. It's very hard to do these studies, but what they did there is Quebec came up with a system of $5 a day daycare, and this led to a 30% increase in the number of working women. So they go and they look at data at how it worked out for kids and families before and after, and since the other provinces in Canada didn't do anything like this, they could also compare what's going on there. And what they found was quite striking. Great increases in anxiety and aggression. They also say there's suggestive evidence that families were more stressed. For example, there was more hostile and less consistent parenting for the adults, and worse adult mental health and relationship satisfaction. So my co-author and I, Carrie Lucas, we don't want to run down people who have the kids in daycare. Many of them don't have any choice, but they don't have this information. The studies in America pay no attention, even though they're not as well done as this. this, the number one study here won an award, is the best study in Canada in economic policy, of any area of economic policy. And most people in America don't know anything about it. So we think that's got to change, that there are problems for kids from daycare. Another problem is we have good studies of cortisol.
Well, let me jump right in there, sure. Professor. I think because what we have to focus on here is oftentimes you have two parents working, or if it's a single mom or single dad, they're working and they don't have a choice. Now, I think some parents may have a choice and choose their career, which, okay, we're not going to denigrate them for that. And let's start with the fact that in order to raise a child today, not including college tuition, it's a $250,000 proposition at a minimum. That's if you just kind of do the basics and, you know, stay on a steady course. It's a $250,000 proposition as a minimum to raise children. I've raised three, and I'm thinking, where did all that money go? So when it comes to, you know, contributing to the family financial pie every month, it is important to some because they don't want their kids to have just the basics. They do want their kids to have the opportunity to have a good school. So there are those trade-offs, right? I mean, there are some good things that come from daycare, which means increased opportunities for children as far as financial opportunities. Maybe it's summer camp. Maybe it's a better college. So there are those things. Would that be fair?
That is fair, but look at it from this point of view. Let's just look at two-parent families. Some of them have one earner, some of them have two earners. The public thinks that daycare is not as good as having a parent at home. The polls are clear on this. If a mother would like to stay home, it's usually a mother, shouldn't she get some support from the government? Why are we, Hillary Clinton wants to dramatically increase daycare subsidies. Why do we want to just give the money to kids who put their kids in daycare? Those two-earner families make more money than the one-earner family. Why are we subsidizing them when we think that that's probably not quite as good for kids as having a parent?
I'm of the opinion we subsidize entirely too many people for entirely too many reasons, period. You know, and so suggesting that should we... No, I don't think we should be giving money away the way we do.
Right.
So do I think that we should be giving money to people to stay home? I think we do a lot of that already.
But if Hillary's elected, we're going to have a lot more subsidies for only people who put their kids in daycare. And I say, look at these studies. Look at the cortisol studies, which look at stress hormones. The same kids, Steve, who are at daycare during the week and at home on the weekend, and their cortisol is a lot higher when they're at daycare. This is a stress hormone. It can lead to long-term effects in adults. And I just think the word should get out there. Maybe some people...
And I don't disagree with that. And here's the point that I'll focus on with this professor. We're on with Professor Stephen Rhodes, professor of politics emeritus, Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. I will say this. It seems to me on the left, the subsidies are always aimed at diminishing the family unit and not preserving and strengthening it. What I mean by that is pretty simple. We all know that more dollars flow to single moms from welfare programs than to those that encourage to have the father in the home. In fact, the way many of these systems are set up financially, it encourages the father not to be in the home. In this particular case, you're saying it encourages people to have government subsidies for daycare, but not for the mother to be at the home. Now, that argument I can see.
Yeah, I think that's the most important argument. Let's be fair. Well, parents make different decisions. We can't get in the minds of everyone what their real choices are. But if we subsidize people equally, not just the daycare people, and I get your point, maybe we subsidize everybody too much, but this would mean some parents who have their kids in daycare all day would only have to do it half the day. That's much better for the kid.
Well,
we're only talking about kids under three.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
Well, when I see a study that comes out yesterday that says more than 50% of us, Professor, are taking some sort of government subsidy, I think we might be subsidizing a few too many people. That's my crazy notion of the world.
I don't disagree one bit, but the question is, how do you head off these subsidies which aren't parallel and are subsidizing only things that the evidence shows aren't quite as good for the kids?
Well, I think that maybe we should take a look at all the things we do. But I think you make a good point. I think that the bottom line is this, and I don't care how you slice it, kids are better off with their parents than with somebody else, or a family member. It could be a grandparent.
Exactly.
That's fine as well. They're better with a family member, a responsible family member, than they are with some stranger or some institutionalized, you know, pre-K education, blah, 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 and all the nonsense you hear from the social engineers. Professor, good conversation and a good point you've made today. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Professor Stephen Rhodes, Professor of Politics Emeritus, Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. Do we subsidize too much? Yes. There's your answer. Nothing more to discuss. We spend too much money on too many things that have little or no value and are the pet projects of politicians and their cronies that are also making money off the deal. Anything else? We'll be right back.
Dr. John Wyckoff and the Wyckoff Wellness Center have been pursuing a healthier you since 2005. Focusing on you as an individual, Dr. Wyckoff and his award-winning staff customize their approach to your health. The approach at the Wyckoff Wellness Center utilizes natural solutions, diet, supplements, and bioidentical hormone treatments among an array of cutting-edge therapies to help you reach your health goals. Stop putting off what you've been thinking about for so long. A healthy, happier you. Get started today. Find out more at WyckoffWellness.com.
Great high school athletes learn a lot more from playing multiple sports. They improve their hand-eye-foot coordination. They work different muscle groups. They learn from different coaching styles and teammates. They learn the benefits of being the star of one team and the backup who makes the stars shine on another. Be wise. Don't specialize. A message from the Michigan High School Athletic Association, promoting the value and values of educational athletics.
Or does someone you know have trouble reading prescriptions or insurance forms, maybe filling out a bank form or job application? Then you need to visit the Reading People at 1028 East Saginaw in downtown Lansing, or call them at 517-485-4949. For years, the Reading People have helped thousands in the greater Lansing area learn how to become self-sufficient and improve their lives through one-on-one professional tutoring in adult basic reading and writing, GED, and English as a second language. You can even learn how to read books to your children or grandchildren. Their professional diagnostic and tutorial services are confidential, effective, and best of all, free. Visit the Reading People, 1028 East Saginaw in downtown Lansing. Contact them today at 517-485-4949 or at thereadingpeople.org. Improve your quality of life today.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
I want to fly like an eagle to the sea.
Welcome back to it. So I'm sitting here, you know, trying to discuss with Alex Clark, the engineer driving this train from deep inside the bowels of the MTN network. Yes, we let him out on occasion, but it's not often. He doesn't like, he's one of those people that doesn't react well to light. Fine. And we're sitting here discussing abortion, which drives me bananas because nothing has truly changed with abortion since 1973. It didn't change with the Supreme Court's decision particularly. It hasn't changed since 1973. And I don't know why we spend all of this time talking about it. It makes me a little crazier than I normally am. Megan Barth here, the founder and proprietor of ReaganBaby.com. Megan, I need some mental help here.
Yeah, well, the Supreme Court's decision yesterday, which I actually read through in both dissenting opinions, which were given by Alito and by Justice Thomas, actually does change the abortion argument, because now what the Supreme Court has done, it has allowed abortion providers and doctors to sue on behalf of the constitutional rights of their patients, which never before has existed. Normally, a plaintiff would have to come forward and sue to protect their constitutional rights, but the court had allowed, without really any evidence, to allow abortion providers to come forward and sue on constitutional rights based on
why would an abortion doctor need to sue anybody? They have the full right to abort. We can't even get the Democrats to agree to say that abortion after 24 weeks is, you know, not a good idea. In fact, it's probably murder. We can't even get the Democrats to admit that. So why would an abortion doctor have to sue anyone?
Well, because what they are saying is that any regulations that come forward with regards to abortion cause now an undue burden on their patients. So it has completely turned the argument on its head. So now what you see is Democrats saying that regulations are causing undue burden on people. Well, they don't use that same methodology when it comes to the EPA regulations. They don't use the same ideology when it comes to gun regulations. Only
They do use the same ideology. The state knows all. The state knows better how to raise your children. The state knows what you should eat, what light bulb you should use, how much water you use when you flush your toilet, what kind of tea kettle you can use in Britain. The state does know better. Okay, that's the whole movement.
Well, the whole movement behind abortion is the eugenicist movement, and that has been the case since day one. When you look at what Ruth Bader Ginsburg told the New York Times Magazine, frankly, I had thought that at the time Roe was decided, there was a concern about population growth, and particularly growth in populations that we don't want to have too many of. So you would think that maybe the reporter from the New York Times Magazine would say, "What do you mean by that, Ruth? Which populations don't we want too many of?" Well, she never asked that follow-up question. But this is the horror of the abortion movement. When Roe v. Wade was decided to allow a woman to execute her child, murder her child, it was based on eugenicists, the feminist movement based on eugenics. This is
all right, and I get that. Now, hold on. Hold on.
Control.
Hold on, take a breath. I know it's early. I know you're in your first cup of coffee. It's a dangerous time of day. I get it. Mm-hmm. But here's the fact. We can talk about this all we want, and we can talk about it since 1973, and we can talk about tomorrow and before the election of this cycle and the next, and it's not going to change. And abortion is going to apparently get strengthened, and abortion is going to exist, and apparently right up until the time the child's born is what Democrats support. And at some point, they might even support postnatal abortions if they figure that that's okay, which is basically let the child be delivered and then abort it, if you get by what I'm saying. What can we do about it?
Well, we really can't do much about it, but we certainly can stop abhorred practice of late-term abortions, which will be next, because that's always the case. It's always incrementalism with fascism or progressives, always chipping away. But we can stop it by not electing Hillary Clinton, because right now what we have is an activist judiciary, much like the Ninth Circuit out of California. We now have an activist Supreme Court, where even Justice Kennedy cites undue burden when he supported regulations for abortions in the Planned Parenthood case against Casey in Pennsylvania. So he flipped on his head. So this undue burden clause is an absolute joke. Why the Texas law was HB2 was passed in the first place was after the Gosnell horror story. You remember Kermit Gosnell out of Pennsylvania. They found an abortion doctor with an abortion clinic. He was convicted of basically murdering many, many children in late-term abortions, botched abortions, and manslaughter of two of his patients. I think he was convicted of murdering three children. But this was passed to avoid the Gosnell situations in abortion clinics that weren't up to standards. And what the Supreme Court did in their support say, Gosnell's behavior was terribly wrong, but there is no reason to believe that an extra layer of regulation would have affected that behavior. Determined wrongdoers already ignore existing statutes and safety measures. So you have a Supreme Court right now that are saying regulations won't impact behavior, which is the complete antithesis to what the Democrats are about. But they make
they're all about control, and so yes, it's
progressive. Hold on, Steve. Progressives make these special exceptions only when it comes to abortion,
and
this
and their
is where
agenda.
The Supreme Court. Correct. This is where the Supreme Court makes these special exceptions, not based on the Constitution, based on their policy judgment.
Let me go out on a limb here. Megan Barth from ReaganBaby.com. Who are you voting for?
Donald Trump.
I'm so surprised. I'm shocked. Megan Barth, always a great conversation. Well articulated. Thanks for stopping in, as always.
No problem.
is almost over for the day, but I do appreciate your participation, and I'm glad you're here on time. The hotline number, 888-900-9966. We have room for one more, and Bob is giving us a call from Charlevoix today to check in. Bob, what's on your mind?
Thank you. This is about the abortion issue. I've got a doctor friend that probably has delivered over 10,000 babies, and not one time did he have to, it was necessary for an abortion, for, you know, to kill the baby. And here's a Bible verse for it, Steve, too. It's before I formed, it's Isaiah chapter 1, verse 5. Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee. And I have ordained thee as a prophet unto the nations. This is about Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, God, in this, if God doesn't bring his judgment on America for this abortion issue, for the 40 million babies that have been killed, he's going to have to resurrect Sodom and Gomorrah and apologize.
Bob, I greatly appreciate you checking in. Thanks for stopping by. The hotline number, 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. You're welcome to share your thoughts here. Here's something for you to end the day on, something nice, I guess. You know, something nice to keep you, something positive. Former NFL star Tim Tebow, speaking of Christians, and the Delta Airlines flight crew leapt into action over the weekend to help a man experiencing a medical emergency. Richard Gotti wrote in a Facebook post on Sunday about the in-flight medical emergency on a Phoenix-bound flight from Atlanta that he witnessed. Gotti said that a man a few rows ahead of him began suffering what appeared to be heart problems. He said everyone on board the plane helped, whether it was chest compression, starting an IV, helping breathe life into the man, or just praying. The crew of Delta Airlines were amazing. They acted in a fast, professional manner. Then he noticed that a man starting to walk down the aisle toward the family was in distress. I observed a guy walking down the aisle. That guy was Tim Tebow. He met with the family as they cried on his shoulder. I watched him pray with the entire section of the plane for this man. He made a stand for God in a difficult situation. He also said when the plane landed in Phoenix, the man got a pulse back. Although the man maybe later passed away, Tim Tebow did what he thought was right and what he believed. You should do what you believe and what you think is right today. Have a good one. I'm Steve Gruber.